National University of Singapore, Department of Geography. So I think I'm a geographer rather than an urban planner or designer. So I think in today's talk, I'm going to, you know, share with you my experience, you know, from a geographer's perspective. So mostly, I think I use GIS. Of course, the GIS science is part of my research interest. It's my major. And also, I try to apply the GIS to different disciplines, including the urban planning, the land use planning, the transportation, the, and also some social sciences and humanities even. Yeah. So maybe we can talk with each other before the official presentation. Enjoy your lunch. It's really my honor to be here and to have this opportunity to share with you my finished research work in past years. Of course, it's still ongoing because we do have lots of the more applications of more further development about systems, about this piece of work. So in this presentation, I'm going to just introduce the finished part of this. I think it's big, but maybe it's very small for you. So it's about the spatial optimization for sustainable land use planning. As I mentioned, I'm a geographer. I'm a GIS specialist. So that's why I put the spatial optimization just before the sustainable land use planning. You know, we can use, actually, you know, as we know, the spatial optimization is kind of advanced spatial analysis part inside the GIS. And of course, we can use it to support the sustainable land use planning. And of course, we can also use it to support some other decision-making process. So that's also why I put this spatial optimization just before the name of sustainable land use planning. I think the topic should be slightly different from the planner's view or designer's thinking about this similar topic, but I do believe this is just the beauty of the interdisciplinary research about how to, you know, support the planning process using GIS. Okay. And another point I want to mention is, for this presentation, I'm not going to introduce or explain too much about the formulas to avoid wasting of your time, because, you know, just some of you may be quite interested in the very complicated formulas. So here, I just want to introduce some basic principles behind this kind of slides or research. And of course, if you are interested, we can also, you know, discuss the details after this presentation. Okay. So in this presentation, totally, we have four parts. Firstly, I want to give a very brief introduction to the background and the context about this research. And also, after that, I'm going to introduce what is spatial optimization, and of course, within the context of land use. And followed by several case studies. And finally, I want to wrap up and maybe also introduce several the future work and the trend of this research direction. So background. From this slide, I think in the flyer, the newsletter, you can also find this cloud tag, right? So clearly, you can find we have a big geography right here, and a very big, another big planning right there. So I think, of course, it's from a geographer's perspective, so maybe slightly different. But of course, from this slide, we can clearly find the research question in this research project. We want to do some land use planning. You can also find the land use planning, considering multiple objectives. And of course, the objectives should be related to the sustainability and all sustainable development. So I think it could reflect the topic I want to introduce in this presentation. Land use planning or allocation. I believe, based on the introduction, I believe most of us are quite familiar with the basic concepts about the land use planning or urban planning, but I still want to maybe recap the definition, okay, about the different concepts. From FAO, the land use planning or allocation is a decision-making process that facilitates the allocation of land to the uses that provide the greatest sustainable benefits. So we have the benefits to consider. So it's kind of maximization. So it should be kind of optimization process, right? Of course, we need to consider many different factors like the sustainability. So without mentioning the sustainable land use planning, so just for the land use planning, of course, we also need to consider the sustainability, you know, inside this kind of process. It is also a systematic assessment of physical, social, and economic factors in such a way as to encourage and assist land users in selecting options that increase their productivity, are sustainable, and meet the needs of society. So we have different, I mean, the dimensions or factors to consider, right, including the physical, the social, and economic factors. So, of course, I think we really need to have different scholars from different majors to sit together like today and to talk about this kind of topic. So this is about the introduction about land use planning. So actually we can also divide, you know, land use planning to two parts. The first part on the left is about the land use structure. I think it's more about the different among the ratio of different land use types. And you know, based on the different land use types, we need to allocate the certain ratio of land resources, right? It's about the land use structure. And on the right, besides, we also need to allocate the specific land use types to specific places. So it's kind of a spatial problem. So the first one is only about the numericals. The second one is about the allocation. It's kind of a spatial problem, which should be, and it definitely is, a very complicated problem. Okay, so this is about another understanding on the land use planning. So, of course, this is the case, right? It's very straightforward. So from not nothing, maybe we have already have something here, right? Like if you want to do more about the campus planning, of course, we have lots of existing buildings. Or maybe you want to make some change, but basically we need to keep the existing buildings or arrangement of different resources or facilities. So by allocating the specific land use of different resources to different places, we can finish this kind of the land use planning, right? So this is a demonstration about, you know, how to allocate different land uses or different resources to different places. It's kind of special problem. So sustainable development, I think, is also a hot topic in past several decades. So of course, I think maybe all of us should have a very basic understanding about this concept. But here, I think maybe we can also try to, you know more details about this concept. So the sustainable development is development that meets the needs of present without compromising the ability of future generations to meet their own needs. So this is from Our Common Future in 1987. So basically, of course, I think in brief, we can understand it to be okay, we need to be considerate, not only for ourselves, but also for the future generations. So of course, during the land use planning or other kind of planning or resource management process, of course, we need to consider that. So for some cases, maybe, especially in the developing countries, maybe the economy is very important. We need to make money and to survive. But also we need to keep the existing ecological areas. Of course, we need to consider what will happen in the future, right? Not like we can use all the land for now and, of course, make money just for our generations. So I think this is just the key point about the sustainability or sustainable development. And also, oops, I think we missed a figure here. So I think also we have three primary dimensions to understand the sustainable development, including the environmental benefits, the ecological benefits, and the social equity. So considering the three dimensions, we can have this basic concept to achieve the true target or objective of sustainable development. Okay, so this is about the sustainable development. And so another concept I want to introduce is the multiple objective optimization. So of course, I think all of us should be familiar with what is optimization. So what is the multiple objective optimization? And of course, it means we need to consider, for the cases, if we need to consider two or even more conflicting objectives. So it's kind of multiple objective optimization. So it should be similar as a single objective optimization, but of course it's more complicated. So back to the sustainable development. As mentioned here, we can find, you know, we have three primary goals to consider, right? So in order to implement the different objectives, so here we also need to, you know, consider three primary objectives inside the land use planning. So that's about this basic concepts about why we need to do this kind of optimization. So spatial optimization. So here I think maybe you think it's quite straightforward to consider the multiple object optimization. But actually, considering the land use planning, so it's slightly different because we need to consider, you know, many different objectives like the spatial allocation, so it's different. So that's about the spatial optimization. And here we have the concepts about the spatial optimization. So it's maximizing or minimizing the planning objectives subject to constraints on area, resources, and spatial relationships for a local location-related problem. Of course, we have similar applications here, like the zoning. It's about the land use planning, and also I think maybe all of us have heard about the redistricting as well. Besides, we also have the site selection of the facilities to be another kind of application inside the spatial optimization. And also we have the routing, right? Try to find the shortest path to plan the route we need to take. Actually, I think, you know, that is just about the basic introduction about the, you know, spatial optimization. Actually, I think another point I want to stress here is the complexity of this kind of problem. So basically, I think the optimization is already, you know, very complicated if we have, you know, different spatial objectives or constraints to consider. So it's even more complicated. So here's the case. So if you are the boss of the KFC restaurant, right, and now you want to find 50 possible locations to initiate, you know, the new KFC restaurants, right? Of course, here you have around 100 possibilities, options. So I think it's quite straightforward, right? It's just like the C150, right? So of course, but you know, if you want to use the enumeration method to calculate this kind of scenarios, so it's going to be 29th power of 10. So it's really, you know, the big number, right? So if we want to use a computer to help us, right? If a computer can generate 100 billion solutions per second, then it takes more than 100 million centuries to finish the calculation. Of course, I think nobody wants to use the enumeration methods, right, to solve it. Of course, we do have, you know, better solutions or better methods or models. But of course, for many cases, especially in the spatial context, we do need to use this kind of enumeration as the base. So that's why I think, that's why I want to mention the complexity of this kind of problem here, and also want to introduce, you know, more methods or innovative models or more effective models in the following slides. So to wrap up, I think for this research, the primary research question is how to achieve the sustainable land use planning through the state-of-the-art methods or models and the technologies of spatial optimization and the GIS. So to address this primary question, of course, we can try to divide it to many different research objectives, including to interpret the sustainability of land use planning and quantify the sustainability objectives and the constraints that guide land use planning. Because I think, as I mentioned, we have the three primary objectives, right? But it's really hard for us to quantify the different objectives or realize these kind of goals in the true planning scenarios. So here it's really important for us to interpret, to understand the three primary goals, I mean, in the true case, in the real case. So I think this is why I list the first objectives to be the interpretation. And the second one is to design the land use optimization model to integrate these objectives and constraints. Of course, we need to develop a model, right, to host different objectives and try to find a way to represent this kind of spatial planning process. After that, we also need to find an efficient method, not enumeration, right? We cannot wait that long. So we need to find a more innovative, effective, or more efficient methods to solve this kind of problem. And after that, I think to help the planning, to support the planner's behavior, planning process, we also need to establish a user-friendly interface to support this kind of language planning. And also considering the complexity and of course the true cases, we also need to explore the integration of high-performance computing, including the clusters or even the cloud computing to speed up this kind of calculation process to solve some unsolvable problem in the past. So that's why I list this one as the last objective. So spatial optimization. So here I just divided the whole research to be different pieces. So the first one is about the objectives and model formulation. So the objectives are referring to the different primary objectives we want to consider, rather than the research objectives. Okay, so as I mentioned, we have different. Primarily, we have three: the economic benefits, ecological or environmental benefits, and social benefits. To interpret these three objectives, of course, I think we can find different methods to interpret this kind of different primary goals. So the first one I want to mention is the GDP. I think it's quite straightforward for us to use to reflect at least partially, the economic benefits, right, to about different scenarios. So based on this kind of scenario, what kind of economic benefit we can get, right, is the problem. So basically, we can try to at least assume the specific land uses and the specific amount of the GDP values, right? So the second one I want to mention is energy consumptions, right? So it's also related. And also we have the urban patterns, the compactness to be considered spatially. And also the compatibility, the ecological protection, the environmental impact, accessibility, conversion cost. Of course, we don't want to spend too much money to change it, right? We really need to consider that. And also more and better located public areas, etc., etc. So we have, besides these general objectives, we also have, these specific objectives to consider. Of course, for different case studies, I'm not going to integrate these objectives together because it's too complicated. But I think I just want to say, of course, during this kind of planning process, you have to have your focus. And also, you can try to quantify and consider the different objectives together using the GIS or spatial optimization to support you. So, of course, besides the objectives, we also have the constraints to be considered, right? And for different cases, maybe we need to consider these restricted areas, right? If it's restricted, we cannot use it. So we can just exclude this kind of area out. And also, maybe we also need to have the minimum requirement for some specific land uses, land use types in 20 years. At least I think we need to accommodate enough population in 20 years. So that's kind of constraints to guide this kind of land use planning process. So, we have so many different objectives. I'm not going to introduce all of them, but this one. This is about the maximization of the compatibility, which means for different land use types, of course, we need to consider their neighboring relationships. For different land use types, of course, they have their different preferences for different land use types. For the residential areas, the people like to stay with the commercial lands, right? They don't want to stay with industrial lands. So we do have different kinds of preferences, which could be reflected by this kind of table and which need to be considered inside this kind of land use allocation. So here you can find for different, these numbers are referring to different land use types. And for the similar land use types, of course, they like to be neighboring to each other, right? So
so it's 1. And but for some other kind of land use types, maybe it's minus 0.2, maybe it's 0.9 or 0.8. Of course, we can use a pairwise comparison methods or any kinds of different methods to define these kind of values. Or you can make your decision by yourself. Okay, so for here, you can find it's also kind of spatial objective, right? It's not just like the very simple objective, because we also need to consider the neighboring relationships among different neighbors or even different polygons, right? Neighboring connected polygons. So formulation here, I think, is quite straightforward. So here, I think it's more like we define the whole research area to n by m cells, you know, pixels. So it's kind of raster data sets. I think you may know the difference between the raster and the vector data sets. For here, of course, we can also extend it to be, I mean, the vector data set, right? But maybe we can change the n and m to be just one m or n. So for here, we can find we have the n rows and m columns, right? The cells. So for here, we can try to combine, you know, different values together. Like the bxijk is kind of value referring to the different cells. And the bijk is a parameter based on each cell for each land use type. I think it should be quite straightforward here. So here, which means one land cell can only be allocated one land use type. Okay, so in this case, we can combine them together. And also, if we want to combine the different objectives together, spatially, so we can add another kind of value here to be the weights. So this is a difference right here. Right, we have the consideration of different weights for different objectives. And also, of course, I think we need to normalize the different weights before we can combine them together. Right, before we combine the different objectives or considerations together. So this is about the formulation. So I think the first case study is about the artificial intelligence integration for efficient and effective implementation of the model. So maybe we can have a look. Methods. Maybe it's quite challenging here. So here, the first method I want to introduce is one of the heuristic methods, the genetic algorithm. It's based on the Darwinian paradigm. And of course, we have it has a robust search and optimization mechanism and capability. And here you can find, you know, the whole structure of the paradigm, basic paradigm of this kind of algorithm. Of course, we need to just get some basic populations first, and then we need to, you know, make some selections. Of course, the population need to reproduce to the further generations, and based on that, this is about the mutation, the crossover, and then we need to do some computations and select some of them to be the, you know, the survival solutions. And based on that, we can, you know, finally select the best solutions, or at least the near optimum solutions, which is just what we need. Okay, so this is about the genetic algorithm. Of course, I think it's pretty easy for us to handle the single objective optimization, because, you know, we only have one fitness function, right? We can consider this kind of function directly. But if you want to consider, you know, the multiple objectives problems, of course, you can also use it by combining together, right? Considering different weights. But actually, I think it's still problematic, because, you know, you cannot easily understand the weights, you know, before you do this kind of experiment. So that's why I also want to introduce another kind of algorithm, the Pareto front-based algorithm. Okay, so here's the case. This is a non-dominated sorting genetic algorithm. Of course, it's not about the genetic algorithm. Okay, I just want to say, introduce the paradigm of the whole the Pareto front-based methods. So from here, you can find we have the first population, right? First iteration, we have this kind of solutions. And after that, we need to do the sorting. We need to make the selection based on whether this solution is dominated by others. So this is the case. Okay. So for example, if we have these two solutions like this, this R and this dot. So we can find, you know, we have similar F1
which means maybe for this object, right, they can give us a similar GDP finally, two scenarios. But based on maybe the accessibility right here, so we can find the I is better because we want to minimize it. So in that case, we can understand this one is dominated by this dot. So the target of this kind of algorithm is trying to reach all the points, all the solutions on the peripheral front. Okay, so I think it's maybe not so easy to understand, but of course, after that, I'm going to introduce some practical case based on that, okay? So after that, of course, I think even you don't have any prior preference for different objectives, you can also easily input your personal preference for different objectives. And then these solutions could, you know, pop up based on your preference and also could be visualized on the platform. Okay, so compared to the first weighted sum, the algorithms, this is, I think, more powerful for multiple objectives. So this is the introduction about the algorithms and the methods, I think, which should be very challenging or boring for most of you, right? But here I want to introduce several case studies, okay, based on that, different models and the systems. So the first one I want to introduce is, of course, the research area. So the research area is Tongzhou New Town, which is part of, you know, the Tongzhou County in Beijing. Okay, the Tongzhou County is here in the southeast part of Beijing, and the Tongzhou New Town is just the primary area, you know, in the middle of this county. So here you can also find, you know, different land use types. Primarily here we can see the residential, the industrial, the commercial, and the green. Of course, you can have more land use types to be considered, right? If you have enough time or you want to make it more complicated, but here, because, you know, for this kind of research, the primary purpose of mine is to propose this kind of model, to just introduce this kind of model to all of you for your reference. Maybe you want to use it. Maybe you want to use it to your practical project. Maybe I think that could be helpful. Okay, so it's just kind of a case to, I think, demonstrate, you know, the effectiveness and efficiency of these kind of models. Okay, so of course we also have some constraints, right? Like this, restricted areas, and also this is the existing land use status quo. Okay, in this area. And the first case is the Pareto front-based land use optimization. And here we only consider, you know, three objectives, including the minimization of conversion cost, and the maximization of the accessibility, and the maximization of the compatibility. And of course, we also have, you know, two constraints, right? Including the restricted areas and the minimum need of residential area, okay, in different places to accommodate the enough population after maybe 10 or 20 years. So here's a first result. You can find it's simplified, right? Because of the complexity and the computation, you know, the intensity. So we decided to simplify the case. Of course, I think it can also demonstrate the capability of this kind of proposed model. So the first one you can find is the best solution for equal, based on the equal weights, which means, you know, if we have different considerations, these are three objectives, right? And now, after the calculation based on, if you can remember, we have the Pareto front, right? We can calculate a bunch of solutions on the Pareto front. And then, if you input the different weights of preference, you can get a scenario like this, okay? This is the best solution based on considering the equal weights for different objectives. Okay, so the second one is the best solution for objective one. It's minimizing the conversion cost. So you can find it's quite similar as the land use status quo data set. So in this case, so we can try to, you know, minimize the conversion cost, but of course we also need to consider some other benefits during this kind of process. And this one is better solution for objective two, to maximize the accessibility. So if you check the But here I didn't list the road network. So if you have the road network, you can find the relationships between the scenarios and the network scenario. Okay. Of course, I think this one is for another. Try to minimizing the incompatibility. And of course, this table, this chart is to show, you know, along the iteration of different generations, we could have more and more solutions on the cradle front. Okay, so this is a case. And also, of course, I think this is a figure about the distribution of the different solutions. So originally, we can only get this kind of clusters. Like, we randomly create different scenarios. But after the iterations, after the calculations, we can, you know, get the better and better solutions. So finally, we can get the best solutions on the cradle front in the red dots. Okay. So of course, based on this kind of dots, because for this case, we have, you know, three objectives. That's why we have, you know, this kind of three-dimension chart to visualize the different distribution of the solutions. Okay. If you click the dots, you can also check the scenarios, and even you can also, you know, map it directly. Okay, to support your decision making for this planning. And the second case I want to introduce is the high performance computing integration land use optimization. As I mentioned, you know, it takes a long time, right, to calculate these scenarios. For the first case, even it's simplified. Actually, every time we need to spend around 10 minutes or even 20 minutes to get, you know, the solutions out. So based on many, you know, direct planning support, I don't think we really want to wait a long time, right? Maybe we want to limit the time to be less than 8 seconds, right? So in that case, I think maybe we could try to integrate the high-performance computing resources, right? So here is a case, I think it's also about the design of the whole workflow, and you can find we have, you know, this kind of success to host the different, you know, the solutions, and by, you know, exchange the solutions, finally we can, you know, speed up the process. Okay, so here is the result you can find. For the first case, to reach this kind of fitness function, which means the fitness function means how good the solution is. Okay, represents how good the solution is. So the first solution based on this kind of algorithm took 23,000 seconds to calculate this kind of scenarios. But if you want to integrate more cores or even clusters, right, you can get efficient. You can get the result in a very efficient way. Okay, so this is just a kind of case to illustrate the efficiency of this kind of integration of high-performance computing resources. Of course, currently we are also, you know, trying to implement this kind of model to a cloud. I think maybe after several months we can try to make it even more efficient. So this is about the result too, and this is the case. And you can find we change the data format from the raster dataset to be the vector dataset. I think it's more pleasing, right? I mean, considering the different land parcels. So you can also find a difference. Not difference, because this one is only for demonstrating the efficiency. Based on the different scenarios, of course, I think if we can have the more powerful, you know, the computing resources, we can even get a better results in the similar time, right? So the third one, the case I want to introduce, is a web-based interactive land use allocation prototype. So of course, I think it's very, very important, because we cannot just introduce the models like what I have done to all of you and introduce different formulas. Even I said I don't want to do that, right? So of course, I think we need to have a platform to support the planning making or decision making. So that's why finally I think we need to get this kind of interface or website out. Okay. So this is the primary layout of this kind of prototype. We need to have the input place and the mapping area, and also the distribution, the chart, and the convergence curve to show the convergency of these kind of algorithms. So after you type in the different weights for different objectives, the 1 and 2 and 3, and here we also consider 3 of the objectives. And after running for around 1,000 times, so you can find the iteration of different solutions, we can finally reach this kind of scenario, okay? This kind of scenario. And you can also find the convergence curve to show, yes, we have reached the optimum or even, at least we can say it's near optimum solutions, okay? But I think based on this scenario, maybe you just notice that the weight you just set is not what you want. I do believe it happens, right? Because at the beginning, you may think, okay, the economy is more important. But after that, okay, I think it's too much. So in that case, I can slightly change the weights for different objectives. I change the second one to be 2. And I can rerun it. But of course, the start point is the results we obtained in last run. Okay? So for this one, after another 100 iterations, we can reach this kind of solution. Okay, so it should be different, slightly different from this one. Okay, so after that, maybe you also notice that this is also not what you want, right? You want to consider the third objective more, so you can also change it. And finally, you think, okay, this is what I want, right? And I want to have this kind of scenario to support my decision making. I can, consider the different factors using these kind of scenarios. Or maybe you can just use this part of this kind of scenarios as part of the planning, the decisions. So after that, I think maybe at least you can realize your true preference about different weights, different objectives. This is integration of the different scenarios. After, this is just the path of your understanding about your own preference about this kind of planning. Okay, so based on that, you can finally we can reach the dot, what we need. Okay, so this is result 3. And the future work, and of course, I think I just, have done some work about the scenario planning optimization, but we haven't considered the temporal dimension too much, right? But in the future, I think the land use change optimization for sustainable land use planning is very important and very attractive. And also, as I mentioned, we can try to employ the clusters or cloud resources to speed up this kind of process, right? To make it more efficient. And also, I think we need to develop the more user-friendly interface. And also, maybe we can try to better understand the different objectives, like the accessibility, the competitiveness, etc. Right? And also, as the extensions, we can also do some similar research in some other places, right? In Singapore, in other countries, or even the more studies, related studies like the zoning problems, including the waste collection or redistricting or service coverage. This is a reference, and actually, this is a related special issue on the RGGS, edited by Professor Woman Lee and Professor Richard Church and me. I think it's quite related to this piece of work, and it's also kind of summary of this kind of domain. So I think maybe it's a little bit different from the planning or designer's perspective, but I do believe if we can find a way to better integrate this kind of tools or methods, we can really help the planning process. Thank you. I think that's all of my presentation. Any questions? Please.
I have a question. How do you, thank you for your presentation. I think it's interesting, especially the part, the web-based decision support system.
Yep.
To work with different stakeholders and check scenarios and stuff. I'm wondering, how do you position your research when you look, for example, what geodesign is doing lately,
mm-hmm.
with the, or S3, for example, with the CD engine? And basically, they have sort of similar tools, with sliders where you can test different scenarios. So are you sort of positioning your research within that paradigm, or is it something else, something different?
frankly, I think it's totally different. I mean, for the CD engine or other modules provided by S3, I think it's quite basic, mostly quite basic. But for this kind of research, actually, we have also done some simulation models. You know, we have more advanced, I think, the methods or models involved, which is, I think, very complicated for all of you, but of course it's quite attractive to, you know, GIS specialists like me and some other peers. So I think, yes, if you just want to have very basic application of GIS, I mean, to support the planning, you want to maybe draw something or get some maps out and get the 3D models, yes, I think S3 has done a great job, and you can also find some other similar products or even the web. But I do believe you, if you want to consider this kind of process more specifically or more in depth, I think maybe you want to model it. Yeah. So that's my understanding, I think. And regarding the geo design, I think, yes, it's just the trend of the design, I believe. But I think for now, it's more about a concept, I think, or understanding. Yeah. Please.
Wait.
Last slides. This one?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's coming out. Maybe after 2 or 3 months. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It's coming, but what are the questions?
I think it's the International Journal of GIS.
Oh.
And yeah, so you can find the articles.
Oh,
yes, yes.
Oh.
It's not, as I mentioned, it's just kind of summary of the related, I mean, the work. Similar work, including maybe the transportation or integration of the cyber infrastructure, etc., etc. But for, I mean, all this work I have finished, you can find this reference. Okay, the several articles published in IGGS, CUS, etc. So you can find the details from these articles. Okay, I think it's, please. Oh, I've got it. Please. Frankly, I think, as I mentioned, it's kind of, I think for this piece of work, I want to focus on the modeling part.
Yeah.
And also, at the last, I mentioned the interface, right? I try to, you know, get the planners or decision makers into this kind of process. Of course, I think it's still very challenging, but I believe it's a trend. So it's a challenging part for us to, you know, include the planners to be part of this system. But I do believe, you know, after years, or after the better the user interface design, we can really, you know, get the planners involved. I think like the Google vehicle, right? And I mean, before we have the GPS, you can drive, but you have to try your best to remember the path, right? The route. After you have GPS, you can explore a different world, right? And now I think even you don't have GPS, you don't need to drive. You just need to sit in the car, and the car can directly help you. So I think that's just the trend of the planning support system, right? So at the first stage, we need to draw something by ourselves, right? And then we need to use a computer to draw something. It's more efficient and it's more aesthetically pleasing. But nowadays, I think we have so many powerful computing resources, so many very advanced models. Of course, we can try to use it. Even currently, you cannot understand what is happening for the Google vehicle, but you know that after the experiments, it will work in the future. So that's my understanding about this. Maybe in the future, I think the urban planners, urban designers, geographers, computer scientists can work together, you know, to get very fancy stuff out, I think. But it takes time. Yeah.
So, for example, you're imagining you have a website, you have 4 computers,
mm-hmm.
and you have a response time of 1 minute.
1 minute. That's great.
And you have the municipality, transport department,
yep.
Community,
yep.
Advocacy, and whatever other institution. Do you think that it could be a workflow between all those stakeholders through this tool that you're creating?
I think for now, it's more for this part, right? It's more about the modeling, considering different factors. Of course, as you mentioned, we can also set the objectives to be the purpose of different stakeholders, right? Of course, it could reflect the specific stakeholders, but it's more about the planner's understanding. Like, I want to pay attention to the economic economy, or I want to pay attention to maybe the ecological the benefits. But maybe we can also, you know, like design the objectives to reflect what you need. What do you need, right? Like, we can put everything together, and if you think you are more important, your objective is more important. Just to explain it, and I can give you a higher weight, and then I think we can get something out scientifically. I think it should be more accurate. Not like okay, we only can depend on the subjective. The decision making, right? In many cases, I think we just need to, okay, I give you the rationale, I explain why I think it's important, and finally, okay, I think, yes, we can do it. But to how much extent is a question. So using these kind of systems or the computers, I do believe we can not only, you know, get the correct decisions, but also the accurate decisions. Any more questions? From our planners. Yeah, please.
You go through the iterations.
Mm.
Each cell behaves independently. So there's no sequential hierarchy in your decision. Or you have the option of allowing certain cells to be anchors, and then the rest of the cells evolve.
As I mentioned, if we have this kind of restricted area, right, this one,
right.
So for that areas, they are not, you know, part of the calculation.
Right.
So only the rest of this part.
Right.
Yeah.
But in the cells that's participating in the calculation,
mm.
do you have hierarchical influence in the structure?
For now, not yet, I think. I mean,
so
it's a good point. Yes, it's a good point.
Okay.
I mean, for more efficient calculation, we do need to consider the hierarchical design of different cells. Maybe like we can divide the places to different parts and improve the efficiency. But for now, for these raster cases, this one, I think there are only around 800 or 700 cells. So it's not that
you don't really
need it. Yeah. And for this vector data formats, I think it's around 600.
Mm-hmm.
So for now, we don't need it. But in the future, I believe, especially for the redistricting, right, in different states, if you need to use the whole census blocks, around, you know, hundreds, thousands of blocks, right? So we really need to use it to consider your different hierarchical design about different cells or different polygons. That's a good point, very good point.
And your unit needs to be rasterized rather than polygons being the unit
evolving. No. Actually, you know, for this part, for the first case, we use the raster, you know, pixels, right, to calculate.
Right.
But for the second case, you know, we designed the relationships between among the different polygons. In that case, we have this kind of, you know, table to get, okay, so for this polygon, you know, all the neighboring polygons and which direction. So we, in the computer, in the database, we have this kind of records. So in that case, we can directly calculate the every kind of objectives directly.
So the objects are polygons, not pixels in this
both.
In this model.
This case is, as I mentioned in the beginning, I think the formulation is referring to the rasters because we have M and N. But for this case, if we change the M and N to be just N or M, just one M, right? It's like we have, for example, we have 500 polygons, we have a list of 500 polygons.
Mm-hmm.
And then we can get a neighboring table, like, okay, the first polygon, what other polygons are neighboring to this one? So we have the list. So for this case, actually, it's using, the neighboring relationships table.
Okay. I think your question was so interesting that you know, the city engine and so on, the current planning tools, I think they are advanced in facilitating collaboration and visualization, but they're not, they don't have a plug-in for these quantitative models.
No.
But they're almost like they're geared towards a different planning workflow, right?
Mm.
So if you're the traditional planning workflow, these tools would serve it much better, I think, because it allows a lot of people to participate, everyone draw their own,
yes,
right, a plan, and then share it and evolve through that. It's all qualitative. Right, but there's a lot of collaboration that the software would facilitate. For a platform like this one, you almost can also use that type of collaboration, though you don't need the visualization tool as much, because for setting the parameters, you have a very nice quantitative model behind.
Yes.
But the parameters still come from human, right? Still, you have a you need the process to translate your priorities into numbers.
Mm.
And that translation itself isn't facilitated by the model. You need a number before the model can run.
Not exactly.
Okay.
So I can explain this part. You're right. I think even for this part, you know, so at the beginning I mentioned we have, you know, the genetic algorithm, and, you know, it's a normal one, which is very suitable for the single objective optimization problem, and also mentioned the Pareto front-based algorithms. Actually, for this algorithm, we don't need to set the parameters or preference for different objectives before it's running. So, which means after the running of the algorithm, we can directly get all the solutions on the Pareto front. So considering different objectives. Okay, so after that, because for this one, it could be used to improve the efficiency, because if you want to wait a long time till the model, till the calculation is finished, maybe you need to wait for 10 minutes or 20 minutes, right? But for this one, we can calculate all the scenarios in one try, and then we can store all the solutions in a table in a database, and of course, they could be reflected by different preference on different objectives, and after inputting the different weights, we can directly get it out. So that's why I mentioned, you know, we can directly use it, right? Of course, it's different from, that kind of weighted sum, because we don't need to set the weights or parameters before we run it.
But with 20 parameters, I mean, what does the Pareto front end up looking like in terms of, this is a two?
Two, yes. Three, like, I think for three objectives, maybe it's going to be like this.
Yeah.
And if more, you cannot, mentally, you cannot visually see it, but you can mentally understand it.
But I mean, in terms of either the processing time for the computer or
yes,
the ability of people to look through the Pareto front scenarios for 15, 20 parameters, is it even possible to sort of be sifting through that, or do you have to start first and wait and choose in order to even look at various scenarios that you can compare?
Of course, here I only, mentioned the different weights for different objectives. But of course, for other parameters, we really need to understand it or set it by ourselves. So I think it's also important for us to understand the kind of parameters before we run it. But for this part, specific part,
right?
The Pareto front-based methods is not that important for us to have the prior preference, prior knowledge about different objectives. That's why I mentioned maybe for some cases, at the beginning, maybe you don't have very clear idea about what you want. But after trying based on systems, maybe the system can help you know what you really need. So that's, I think, what I just want to, you know, introduce through this kind of systems. Even if it's very complicated, but I do believe, I think, in the future, if you want to consider the efficiency, or you want to consider the different, more advanced workflow to be integrated in the urban planning or land use planning, maybe I think in the future we can do a better job of more applications based on these kind of models of development.
So in your case studies,
yep,
you were using land use pixels or land use polygon, and if we had to wait over another raster like slope or topography or another vector like roadways or streams, would that add another
complexity? For this model, you know, you need to have all the I think the data sets ready together. You cannot like, okay, I finish this part first and then integrate another kind of layer. So you need to get everything ready before you run this kind of model, I think.
Like, could you rate land use versus slope, or is it only doing land use versus land use in these scenarios?
I think it's dependent on what you want to do, right? It's like if you want to consider the slope or DM or some other layers, of course you can define it directly to the model. Right. So
it's like an attribute on the cell, basically. So the slope would be an attribute of the cell?
Based on the cells, all the polygons.
Okay.
I mean, the second case is based on the polygons. So as he mentioned, yes, you're right. I mean, if you are doing some kind of raster analysis, yes, we can set it directly based on cells. It's kind of metrics.
Okay.
Right? We can directly do the calculation based on the metrics. Yes. So it's open to different data sets, different layers. But of course, I think for now, I think it's not that flexible. You need to get everything ready before you run it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Any more questions? Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for your time.